Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. Twelve minutes past 8 o'clock. It is Thursday morning, the third day of March, 2022. Good morning, everyone. I'm Scott Micklin, and thank you for tuning in to KSJE Today, 90.9 FM, over the air here in San Juan County, New Mexico, KSJE.com, everywhere else on planet Earth, and we welcome our viewers because this is a community-supported visual radio station, and the video is now streaming out live to the KSJE Facebook page, our YouTube channel, and our Twitter account. So thank you for joining us, everybody, because coming up in the next few moments, my monthly visit with archaeologist Paul Reed, and today we have a special guest from the Zuni Pueblo talking about Native American involvement in the protections of the Greater Chaco area of San Juan County in northwest New Mexico. That is coming up in the next few moments, so we hope you'll stay tuned and join me later on right here on KSJE. And then later on this hour, I'll be joined with several students from San Juan College from our film and digital media program. They'll be talking about the documentary that they have produced that will be aired statewide in New Mexico, featuring Native American stories from our area. So we hope you'll stay tuned for that coming up at 8:45 this morning. Next hour, of course, it's Roving with the Arts, our classical music program, and Mick Hess is going to take us roving with the arts. He is featuring music from Shostakovich on the program today. And don't forget, we invite you to connect with us on our Instagram page in addition to our other social media platforms such as Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. And you can subscribe for free to KSJE podcasts wherever you listen to podcasts. So check it out. Maybe there's a show you have missed and you can check those out and take us with you as you make your rounds this spring. Outside our studios this morning, it is a cloudy morning so far. We're expecting a partly cloudy day today, but mild weather continuing. Current temperature, 38 degrees in Farmington at the moment. We are on our way to a high of 70 today, overnight low of 42. And then tomorrow, a chance of rain showers with a partly cloudy Friday, the high near 60 on Friday, 51 with maybe some rain or snow mix on Saturday, maybe some more chance for rain or snow and colder weather on Sunday with a high only reaching 42. And maybe the showers will stretch into Monday with some thunderstorms. High of 46 on Monday, and as you can see, overnight lows from right around the mid-30s to the mid-20s for the next several days. Joining me here in the studio, back for his regular visit with me, local archaeologist Paul Reed is here for his regular visit. Paul, good morning and welcome.
Scott, thanks for having me back. The place looks the same.
Right, I mean, right.
It's been a few months.
Hasn't changed too much since you've been gone, right? But good to have you back.
Thank you.
And so welcome to be in the studio. And you brought with you a special guest that we'll introduce in just a moment because this is all part of our plan. And when I say our, I really mean your suggestion to talk a little bit more throughout 2022 about Native American connections to Chaco Canyon, to these historic places in New Mexico and things along that line that you brought to me. And I thought it was a great idea.
Yeah, great. I mean, we want to really make the connections to the descendant communities. You know, archaeologists study these places. We've studied them for years. And we've really honestly neglected to bring in our Native American friends and colleagues to get that just the more rich understanding of what's going on with these places. So, you know, as I've told you at Archaeology Southwest, we're in a big push now to rethink the way we're doing all these different programs in our work. And I'm thrilled to have partners like our friend who we're going to introduce.
Yes, well, let's do that because and then we can actually put a face and a name to who we're talking about this morning. So welcome Octavius Ciotiwa from the Zuni Pueblo. You are the supervisor of the Zuni Cultural Resource Advisory Team, and so welcome to KSJE. It's good to have you here today.
Well, thank you. This is my first time here, and Paul kind of had to sort of lead me in the direction of doing something like this. I'm glad to be a part of putting that information out, why it's very important that we talk about Chaco and any means possible saving what is still there.
Right. Very important. And how important it is to your culture, to the Zuni culture and the Zuni people, even today, correct?
Correct, yes.
And so I'm looking forward to that part of the conversation as well. So welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. And Paul Reed, we still hear about Chaco and Chaco Canyon. There's a comment period open right now about plans by the BLM to withdraw some of the land around in that 10-mile protection zone, I believe. Correct me
right.
if I'm wrong.
Right. So we're approaching 2 months through a 3-month period of comment. It'll end on April 6th. So we've got information on our website. Our partners in different environmental groups are going out. The tribes and the Pueblos are making a big push to get the word out. And basically the short version of this, just to bring folks up to speed, is in November, Secretary Deb Haaland was at Chaco with a bunch of folks and made an announcement that land would be withdrawn. The federal land around Chaco in the 10-mile zone that we've talked about for a few years. So the clock started ticking for that, if you will, with the formal announcement in the Federal Register in early January. And what they're proposing to do is to take about 351,000 acres and just remove that from future federal oil and gas leasing. So, you know, sort of the important part of this for existing rights is if there are leases or other things that are ongoing, those aren't affected. And this really is just the federal surface. So there's been some talk and I think some misinformation about this impacting Navajo Nation allotted lands or tribal trust. And
not true.
Those continue under the rules that exist now. This is a federal process to remove those lands. And I think really will help protect the sites that Octavius's folks, all our Pueblo descendant communities, and many other people across the country and the Southwest just value tremendously.
Right. And as you and I have talked before, I mean, the land around Chaco Canyon that we're talking about is a kind of checkerboard, literally, area of made up of lots of different ownerships and leasing rights and things along that line. This is just federal land, and that's what we're talking about.
Right, just the federal surface and the subsurface rights that exist down there.
Got you.
You know, and it, so it is not the entire portion of the 10-mile zones for folks who might want to see greater preservation efforts. But, you know, this is a very important step, we feel, to protect what are irreplaceable resources in Chaco, and not just that, but in the lands around Chaco.
And this would be more of a permanent decision,
would be a 20-year withdrawal if it happens. And, you know, with our political winds and the way they blow back and forth, a future administration could choose to go through this same process to open those lands again.
Sure.
We hope that wouldn't happen. And, of course, we're working, Octavius Pueblo at Zuni, the All Pueblo Council of Governors, many people are working to get a bill through the Congress to get permanent protection.
That would be the next step.
So, but this land withdrawal is an initial step. And again, we're really happy to see this moving forward.
And I think if I'm remembering correctly, when we've talked about this in the past, that when past maybe partials have come up, the BLM has just voluntarily withheld them from auction or from leasing. Isn't that how it goes?
Yeah.
And so everyone kind of holds their breath to see if that's going to work again?
Yeah, and at this point we have a 2-year deferment, so nothing new will be put out for lease in this zone until this process finishes and is either complete and happens or the withdrawal doesn't happen.
I see.
And the way it looks like, you know, the process is moving forward. We'll see how that works. But in the old days, before we had, you know, sort of these different temporary moratoriums, because that was announced at some point during the prior administration, they weren't going to do anything around Chaco. But when they do, groups like Zuni Pueblo, Acoma Pueblo, they'll get the information and they'll protest. So in the past, when parcels have been withdrawn, it's been because voices have spoken up and said, we're concerned about this area, we don't want this leased. So what this would do is just remove the sort of back and forth. We're going to propose leases and then we're going to withdraw them. This would simply protect those lands, you know, for a long period of time.
Right.
You know, and that's something I think that Octavius and folks would be really happy about.
So. Right. And I want to bring you into the conversation too, Octavius, a little bit about why this is so important to the Zuni Pueblo and I would say most of your people. I don't want to give an absolute because there may be some folks that might disagree with that, but from a cultural standpoint, you know, why is this so important? Maybe talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, I think it's the central hub of who the Pueblo people are. People have gone to Chaco and looked at all the different villages, the little independent structures there, and they made up all these different pueblos that were there. And it's our belief and understanding that this is where we got most of our information of our Puebloan lifestyle, the community involvement that we still have within our Puebloan tribes, also the different religious societies. Also got training information from all the other different people that were there. So this place was a central place for, I guess, pointing us in the direction of who we are today as Puebloan people.
Got it. And that is something that's being discussed more and more in the Zuni Pueblo and among your people and the cultural histories of what makes Zuni Zuni today?
Right. I think that was really left out from any information that was going out on Chaco was just information about what the archaeologists have found, not really going into all the different Puebloan communities and asking the people of who these people were. So all these, they're identified as one group of people in Chaco, but it's not. If you go there, you can identify different structures, different places of religious ceremonies, mm-hmm. and then the smaller structures were aside from the ceremonies. These were little medicine curing houses. They're not really kivas, but they're right now they're all identified. The round structures are identified as kivas. So we want to change that information and giving the right information that we want on Chaco, because we are a big part of this place. And any information that is being put up to the general public should be coming from us instead of the archaeologists that have been working all these years there.
Right. And that's relatively new, isn't it, Paul Reed? You mentioned that, having folks from the Pueblo communities at the table as part of these ongoing discussions about Chaco and what these things mean, I mean, that is some of a relatively novel approach to the work that you were doing.
Yeah, and it's crazy on one hand, because the way anthropology was practiced more than 100 years ago, that's what was happening. Folks went with Zuni elders to Chaco in the early days and talked to them. Zuni workers did a lot of the work at Chaco. You know, they worked with masonry and they did excavations and other things. So, and other Pueblo groups were involved. And then archaeology kind of passed into this period of, I would call it in some ways, extreme science for decades. And we didn't talk to descendant communities. And I think we stopped being interested in what we were learning from those groups, which to me is just, it's crazy on one hand, right? And so the fact that we have to go back and fix this now is the legacy of not having done the archaeology and the anthropology the way we should have been doing it for decades. So, you know, I'm grateful that there are individuals like Octavius and my other friends and colleagues in different descendant communities and different Pueblos who want to talk to us, partner with us, and get these stories out. And because, you know, I think archaeology has neglected this for way too long. So I'm happy to say that most of my colleagues, at least the ones I talk to frequently, are ready now to embrace a different approach to understanding America's, you know, indigenous and native history. And the folks are still here. They're right here.
Right.
You know,
right.
This isn't Stonehenge. I've made that point many times. This isn't a vanished group of folks. They're living in and amongst us in communities that have existed for hundreds of years. So.
And it's not just Zuni, even though, we have Octavius here with us today, but there were a number of Pueblos, right, that you are reaching out to and including in this project to hear their stories and I think most notably preserve their stories and their connections to these places that we all hold dear. And that's an important part of this as well.
Right, exactly. I mean, I've had contacts with all of the New Mexico Pueblos at some level, and not all have participated to the same degree that Zuni has. Acoma's been a close partner. Tasuke, Santa Clara, some contacts with Taos, Santa Ana, and then, you know, our Hopi friends in Arizona, of course, you know, very important in the Chacoan picture and the understanding of what happened in the past. So, I think we're really in a very exciting time to help some groups reconnect if they haven't been in great connection, and then just to broaden what we know, what we understand, and just improve the way we do, you know, our cultural work, and so that it is not just a scientific enterprise shoved over here in a corner, but it's something that's actually beneficial to the groups, you know, who've descended and come through these amazing places.
Right. And so, Octavius, let me turn back to you a little bit about the Zuni Pueblo's connections to Chaco and the greater Chaco landscape. And you mentioned that, Paul mentioned that for years, folks would go to that site and be there and certainly participate in some of the maybe remembrances and things along that line. But how far back, I guess, do the stories go about the connection with Zuni Pueblo? I mean, are they forever? Or help us understand a little bit about how the Pueblo sees its connection to this place.
Okay. Well, it's very difficult to put a time frame on it.
Okay.
Because all of our information is taught orally.
Sure.
And it's not written in text form, but getting all this information from the elders, and it's passed on, like it got passed on to me, and now I'm doing the same thing. And that's how we understand. And for our information is that when we talk about Chaco, that was when the earth was still raw, and it's very new stages is when Zunis talk about Chaco. So
so early. I mean,
very,
right?
Yeah. It's like I said, it's very hard to put like
right
1800s or anything like that. But
sure. But in those stories that are passed down from generation to generation, it is the Zuni influences from Chaco are there.
Right.
Is what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. Well, it was during that part of our history that we were actually looking for our own little niche in who, in where we would consider home. And all of these places like Aztec and Salmon and Chaco and all of the surrounding places that are now identified as big sites for the Pueblo people were just a destination, a travel through places for our Pueblo communities. We were all instructed to look for our own niche, our own little place within the Southwest. And so when we came to an area that had other Puebloan people, of course, they all welcomed each other and started a community there. But they understood that this was not, for Zuni, it was the middle place. I know for Hopi, I think they call it the I forgot their the middle of the galaxy or something like that. Anyway,
okay.
We all had our different locations that we're looking for, and that was not the middle place for Zuni, so we moved on. And all of these places were left as physical evidence of us being there in the past. And that's what I want people to understand, that because when I started working with archaeologists, all that information they disappeared, they left this place. And I said, no, we didn't. We just had to move on.
Right.
And we still go to Chaco because we've identified some shrines that were left by our people. Different Pueblos have different shrine locations. And so when we go to Chaco, that we identify these places. And we knew of one up in Fajada Butte that was off limits to just about anybody. But I was really adamant about looking for that shrine, and we actually found it. And so when we do make a visit to Chaco, we go to these shrines, and that's how we reconnect back to our ancestors that were there.
Sure. And when you found it, it kind of reconfirmed what you had hoped you would find
right
at the shrine then?
Right. Because I said it's all oral history, and they talk about places and you hear about these places and come to an area, and then everything starts fitting in like a puzzle.
Right. Well, I can only imagine what it would mean to be hearing these stories passed down generation to generation and just hear about these places in this oral kind of ethereal setting and then be able to go to the actual place and see that what was told in the story actually still exists to this day. Is that,
yeah.
And that's what you're describing to
right,
us.
Right, yeah. Well, in Zuni, I have an advisory team. It's made out of 8 religious hierarchy from Zuni. And it's through a tribal resolution that gives us that authority to talk in behalf of Zuni in all these different places. So we have the Rain Priest, the Medicine Society, and then the Kiva leaders. I have some of my advisor team members belong to maybe all 3. So we try and cover all the bases of our work within the religious hierarchy in Zuni. So each individual has their own information that comes from their elders. So when you combine all of us together and we start talking about it, like I said, we'll start filling in the puzzle pieces.
Right. And you have someone like Paul Reed who's writing everything down probably because this is really interesting information. I don't know, Paul.
Yeah,
is that,
only with permission.
Right, so, right. Good point.
Yeah,
good
well,
point.
It was because, you know, Octavius was part of the team that was at Solomon Ruins over the last few years working through the NAGPRA process and helping to get the ancestors back on their journeys.
Right.
And I said to the group explicitly when they came, let's talk about things that come up, but we're not taking notes on this as a research project. This is designed to fulfill the need to, you know, finish this process that
sure.
was interrupted with those excavations. So I personally kept that in a very careful space. You know, Octavius and I have another project that we're going to do with Zuni at some point this year to get out on the Chaco landscape, and this connects in some small way to the larger Chaco ethnographic project that Zuni and four right. of the other Pueblos and Hopi are doing. We're going to go to specific places and learn things. And in that sense, it'll be, well, we're going to write this down and talk about it. So, you know, one of the things, it's good you brought this up, Scott, because in the past, people would go and talk to different folks in different communities and just write things down and basically go write books and never come back to the communities or say, hey, can we talk about this?
Right.
You know, and of course, Frank Cushing at Zuni is one of the worst examples of somebody betraying deep, deep secrets and very sacred knowledge without the consent of Zuni Pueblo. So we're, you know, those of us who do ethical work, which I hope is most of us, are super careful about that these days.
Right.
You know, it was amazing for me to go to Chaco with Octavius and the team from Zuni when we were in the midst of the Solomon work because we just wanted to reconnect to Chaco and just hearing the discussions. And like he said, getting all these society leaders and Kiva leaders together, it's an amazing synergy and you know, from my outside perspective and what they learn about those places and what it means to them is amazing for me to watch.
Right. But it is a bit of a cultural tiptoeing, I suppose, right? To make sure that everyone is treated respectfully and cultural concerns are addressed and respected and things along that line, not just with Zuni Pueblo, but with all the other Pueblo partners that you are working with, correct? And this project and many others, I think, is part of this.
Yeah, and that's just part of my re-education. As you know, I learned archaeology in the 80s in a very specific way, and I've had to unlearn a lot of that, and then that's been fine for me because it's been a time of great personal growth and again, seeing the connections of Octavius and the Zuni folks and many other groups to these places on the landscape that I've understood from a certain perspective, this has totally broadened for me, you know, what I think I know, you know, as just a person and not even as an archaeologist. So it's been very valuable.
Right. I'm
very grateful.
Right. And Octavius, let me ask you, I mean, I would guess, hopefully an educated guess, that a level of trust has to be there when you're working with someone like Paul Reed and talking about some of these very important cultural milestones, cultural landmarks and things along that are, you know, maybe part of the Pueblo's culture and maybe private and supposed to be private, but yet to share them with someone like Paul, who can continue his work but also be respectful, I would think that having a level of trust is very important to having anything like this project move forward.
That's correct. When I first started at a young age, I was the youngest member of the advisory team, and to this day I'm still questioning why and how I was invited to join the elders. and just listening to the elders talk about all these different places was the information that I received through them, and that I'm still talking in their spirit and the language that they used in telling me about these different places. So when all these different books from Bunzel, Stevens, Cushing, when they came out, the elders reluctantly talked a little about some of the information that are in the books. But these individuals were very forceful and used different ways of getting them to talk. So when that information was put out in books, that our elders went and within themselves and they didn't want to put any more information out. But when I joined, I started working with Park Service archaeologists and having that information not going out for protection of these places was difficult to have my elders understand. It took one example to really change their attitude again to divulge in a little information. And sometimes I use that information of how it changed, but this is a very short time that we have, but it convinced them to start putting a little information, their own information, not because when I read Cushing and Bunzel, I would say it was 80% assumption of what the Zunis did or what they understood is in that book. And I read a little, said, I'm not going to read anymore because it's not true.
Right.
And so, and I told my elders a little information would go a long way in protection of these places. And so they opened up a little, and but when they, before they talked to Park Service archaeologists, they wanted to talk to each, amongst each other. And of course, either myself or Lauren Pantia would be the spokesperson for the elders. And they would tell us what we want,
right,
what information went out there. So, and from there, I started working with different groups, different federal agencies, and the information that I received from my elders is still the same information that I'm putting out there. Because all of this information comes from the respect and the openness from the elders to tell the younger people about all these places. And in order for them to give that information out, when you're listening, you're not supposed to be asking questions. And if they figured that you asked a question that they didn't want to answer, they would just, that's it.
Right.
You're not getting any more.
Right.
So true. It's difficult to be working with the elders because they're the ones that had the information from their elders to the other elders. And it kept going back to when, like I said, when the earth was still in its raw stages when we were in all these different places.
Right. I understand. But I would think it's also important maybe to them to set the record straight and to make sure that correct information is out for the younger generations and things along that line. And that was my next question to you about, you know, what do you hope younger folks who maybe are as old today as you were maybe when you first started working with the elders in the Zuni Pueblo, and what do you hope that they learn about Zuni's connection to Chaco and this area and the landscape as we see maybe this these changes take place maybe in a more 20-year permanent period?
Well, it's you know, we all had to go to school, and for me it was the Catholic school. I went to a Catholic school, and I never questioned what they were teaching us, but we learned. We, you know, just math, writing, reading. And when I started going to high school, I started going through different types of history classes and civics classes, and graduated in high school. I went to business college, and I never questioned why our history was never a part of our curriculum, our own native history of places like this.
Never taught.
Never taught. Never even mentioned in school. In fact, we were forbidden to talk in our language. So now it's our opportunity with places like this here to put that information out. Because history, all these places were left as a legacy to us to protect. And that's what we want to do, is put that information out for our young people to understand that all of these places are not abandoned, and they're not ruins. They're ancestral sites. And they still have that same ability, the same information that they left behind is now going through the different processes of education for our young generation to learn about all these different places. And so we're now the, I guess, the teachers for putting that information out to our younger generation. And this is a good way of putting that information out. And it took me a long time to figure out that we had to go through, instead of just talking about it. Because nowadays, if you see a young person, they have their phones, their tablet, their computers. And I was looking at ways to put that information out.
Right.
And so back in 2016, we acquired some funds to do a video of our travels down the Colorado River. And we finished that video in 2016, and it's called Then, Now, and Forever, Zuni in the Grand Canyon. So that video has been out, and now it's on YouTube if people want to see that history.
It's available, right?
It's available. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, it took a while for me to try and put together how we can put that information out.
And now you're working with Paul Reed on this video for Chaco Canyon.
Right, and we're doing another video for Chaco. And more work, you know, once we start putting that information out, it opens the door for more information. And the more information that we can acquire and get from the other pueblos, I think unifies the stance and the protection of this place. Because it doesn't belong to one pueblo. It doesn't belong just to Zuni or Laguna, Acoma, Hopi. This place, it was left by all of our ancestors as a reminder. When they come back, they can understand of our connection to this place, because if you go to Chaco and look at all the plazas, the kivas, and you go to all these Puebloan communities, we still have the same thing. And so when I talk about time, I always say that nothing has really changed of who we are from what happened in Chaco and Salmon and all these places to where we are in Zuni. And I always make three references. I say the only thing that really has changed is time itself, the clothes that we wear on our back, and where we are. So all those three things, if you understand our history, that we're still practicing the same way of life that they did when they were in Chaco.
Good point. Very good. Well, Octavius Ciotewa, I appreciate you being here with us this morning. I really have learned a lot from talking with you, and it's been a pleasure. Paul Reed, let me, final thoughts again about this project. Again, you are talking with Octavius and the Zuni Pueblo, but others as well, as part of this ongoing project. And of course, we're hoping to bring more folks to the program this year.
Right, definitely. I want to have others come in as well. We're working specifically on the film project with Hopi, with the Pueblo of Tasuki, with the Pueblo of Acoma, the Pueblo of Zuni, who am I forgetting, and the Pueblo of Santa Clara. So we've got pretty good representation. You know, we continue our outreach efforts. And the one gentleman, Mark Mitchell, is the chairman of the All Pueblo Council of Governors. And so they've been one of our closest partners now for 6 or 7 years.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well,
so
great project, great conversation this morning. So thank you both for coming in. Appreciate it very much. And good to see you here in studio, Paul. You're off to the canyon later on today, I know, right? You're going to do more work down there.
More filming going on, so
there you go.
Be down there.
All right, very good. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Thanks for being with me this morning. My guest this morning here on KSJE. KSJE and San Juan College present the Student Success Coaching Tip of the Week.
Hello, this is Emin Chi from the Student Achievement Center. This week, we're bringing you coaching tips of the week for week 7. Taking good notes. Studying starts in the classroom. Pay attention and take good notes. So when you're studying later, you're just reviewing information. Speak with your professor about recording lectures on your phone. A recording can complement your notes so you can go back and re-listen to the information in case there are other details you pick up on later to note. Effective note-taking strategies can have a direct impact on your study habits and is one of the most important study tips for college.
The Student Success Coaching Tip of the Week, presented by KSJE and the Student Achievement Center at San Juan College. KSJE is supported by the Farmington Civic Center, bringing a full slate of entertainment to Farmington and San Juan County. Todd Oliver and Irving the Talking Dog, Monday, March 7th at 7:30 p.m. The Farmington Civic Center, 200 West Arrington in downtown Farmington. Find out more online at fmtn.org/shows or at 505-599-1148. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.